Believe it or not.
The Baker's Broadcast, presented in behalf of the 30,000 bakers in the United States and Canada, with Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra, Harriet Hilliard, and, believe it or not, Robert Ripley. All right, Ozzie, let's go with the show.
At the Battle of Bunker Hill, all the men were tired until the drum and the fife gave them new life. And rhythm saved the world. And in France not long ago, all the men were feeling low. The drummer man struck up the band. And rhythm saved the world. You'll find music wherever history's concerned. Nero fiddled while Rome was being burned. If the truth you're looking for, you'll find music won each war. The drum and the fife gave them new life. The drummer man struck up the band. Trumpets blow, beat Jericho, and rhythm saved the world.
Of a million astounding truths. Believe it or not, Robert Ripley.
Greetings, everybody. Hello, Ozzie. Hello, Harry.
Hello, Bob.
You know, tonight I would like to tell you a real story of China. A story about the largest, most amazing bell in the world. The bell of the maiden. The maiden who loved her father more than life. But first, I would like you to hear the Chinese Song of Death. The song the Chinese believe is heard by everyone about to die. No Chinaman has ever heard the song of death and lived. Ozzie, would you play it for us?
Certainly, Bob.
And now listen to the music heard only in the ears of a dying Chinaman.
Oh, gee, Bob, that song gives me the jitters. But say, if no Chinaman who heard it ever lived, where did you get the notes?
Well, Harriet, the notes of this melody were recorded in 1923 when a Chinese musician who was dying sang them to his friend.
But the bell? What about the bell of the maiden?
Well, the bell of the maiden, one of the wonders of the world, still hangs in the temple of Chai Yung Su, about 2 miles from Beijing. It's the largest bell ever rung, weighing about 80,000 pounds. By actual measurement, it's 17 feet high and 36 feet in circumference. Yet these dimensions convey no idea of its majesty and impressiveness. But remarkable as it is, I think the story behind the making of the bell is still more remarkable.
Well, what's it all about, Bob?
Well, Ozzie, let me draw you a radio picture of how the bell was made. We go back 500 years to a moonlit garden near the imperial city. Here we find Koai, the most beautiful girl in China, with her handsome young lover, Lai Yang.
Why do you not speak, Li Yang?
When I look at you, I have no words to speak. You are fairer than the moon and the flowers it shines upon, Koai.
When we are married, you will forget those pretty sayings.
Married? Why must we wait longer, Koai? We love each other so.
It is hard for me to leave my father.
Yes, he too loves you, as no father has ever loved a daughter. I remember when I asked for your hand, the tears came to his eyes.
I am all he has, Li Yang. When I was a child, I told him I would never leave him.
Do not worry, dear one. Our home will always be his home, Koyai. He will be my father, too, and I his son.
Koyai!
Oh, look, your father has returned.
Koyai! Koyai! Where are you?
Here, father. Here, in the garden.
Oh, greetings, my children.
My father.
Sit with us, father, and rest yourself.
No. The moon does not shine for old men, Lei Yang. I'll go back to the house.
But, father, the emperor, what did he want?
The emperor. He has ordered me to build him a bell such as the world has never known.
Only you could do that, Kuan Yew, the greatest bell maker in all China.
A bell that will be heard for 30 miles around.
30 miles? That is impossible. No bell could be...
It is an order, Koi. I must obey.
But how can you cast it? It would be as large as a house, heavier than a ship.
I know, Koi. And that is not all. The emperor orders that the bell must find its strength in brass. Its tone must swell from solid gold. Iron must lend it ageless life, and silver must give it sweetness.
But four such metals, gold, iron, brass, and silver, they will never mix together.
Yet I must try.
Perhaps it could be done. When such a bell is cast, China will never forget your name.
And on the day it is finished, Koyai, let us marry.
Yes, Lei Yang. On that day, we will marry.
For your sakes, then, I shall hurry, my children.
Hurry, Lei Yang. The soothsayer bade me come at midnight. I dare not be late.
We'll be there in a moment. Koyai, why don't you tell me? There is something heavy on your heart. What brings you to the soothsayer?
I must go for my father's sake. It is impossible for him to make such a bell as the emperor commands. Twice he has tried and failed.
Then surely the emperor will abandon the idea. If your father cannot mix iron and brass, gold and silver, then no man can.
The emperor thinks otherwise, Lei Yang.
What do you mean?
I went with my father to the palace today. I overheard what the emperor said.
Yes?
Tomorrow the bell will be cast for the third time. And if he fails again...
What if he fails?
The emperor says he must die.
Die?
What does one life mean to the emperor? He is old, Lei Yang. The thought of this bell has become an obsession with him.
But...
He fears history will forget him unless he gives it to China.
But the soothsayer you would see, what can he tell you?
He said, if I came at midnight, he will tell me how iron and brass, gold and silver can be mixed together as the emperor wishes.
But...
Wait, here is the house.
I will go in with you, Koyai.
No. He bade me come alone. Wait for me here, my love. I will return soon. You have the answer for me, soothsayer?
Yes, Koyai. I have found the secret that will save your father.
Then speak, wise one. I beg you, speak.
I have communed with the stars, Koyai.
And what do they say?
That gold and brass can never be joined together.
But the emperor orders it.
And that silver and iron will never be as one. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless the blood and flesh of a living maiden be mixed together with the metals as they boil in the crucible.
Oh. I hear music, wise one. What is it?
Music? Your ears play you false, Koyai.
No.
There is no music.
No, I hear it. It is the eternal melody. Death. Is there no other way?
The gods have spoken.
All is ready, Koyai. In a few moments, your father will cast the bell for the third time.
This time, he will succeed. The soothsayer promised.
Koyai, I beg you. What did the soothsayer tell you? What is the formula?
My father will live, Lei Yang. I can say no more.
Oh, but...
No. Not even to you, dear one.
You look so sad, Koyai.
Make way! Make way!
But wait, the emperor himself is coming.
Where is the bell caster? One you.
I am here, gracious one. We are ready to cast the bell.
Remember, Kuan Yew, if you fail me a third time, your life itself is forfeit. I must have the bell.
I will try again, sire. I can do no more.
How the furnace roars, Li Yang. Listen to the boiling metal.
Yes.
Like the raging of an angry dragon.
Turn back, Kuai Hai. The flames are rising higher.
Gold and brass, iron and silver. The white heat strikes them with a blinding fury.
Turn back, Kuai Hai. Your father is coming.
The emperor is waiting. When I raise my hand, Li Yang, let the metals run forth.
Yes, Kuan Yew. When you raise your hand.
Do not pause for a single second when I have signaled you. The metals must be poured at exactly the right time. Forgive me, Kuai, if I fail. Death disturbs me not. Only the thought of leaving you, beloved daughter.
You shall not fail, father.
You say I shall not fail. And yet you embrace me as though it were the last time.
Your father is right, Kuai. Why do you act so strangely? Your hand, it trembled.
Take my hand in yours, Li Yang. Only for this moment.
I go to the mole, Li Yang. Be ready for the signal.
I'll be ready.
Oh.
Kuai, why do you cling to me so?
Whatever happens, Li Yang, remember that I will love you forever.
Forever, dearest. Move away, Kuai. You're too close to the furnace.
My father, Li Yang, he is ready to signal you. Watch him closely.
Yes. He is raising his arm.
Why, my daughter? Oh, why have you done this? He has gone, Li Yang. Gone.
Kuai.
All that is left is...
Yes. Her little slip.
Yes. To save her father's life, Kuai flung herself into the seething crucible of molten metals. And, believe it or not, as the soothsayer predicted, the gold, brass, iron, and silver were successfully cast into the greatest bell in all history. As Kuai leaped to her death, Li Yang, her sweetheart, tried to save her, but all that his hand could clutch was her little slipper. And to this day, as the echo of the bell dies away, a sobbing moan may be heard. I've heard it myself. The voice of Kuai, distinctly sounding her own name and calling for her slipper. The Chinese also believe that if their country is in danger, the bell of the maiden will strike of its own accord to warn the people. This is not mere legend. In 1912, Yuan Shikai, the first president of China, planned to overthrow the republic and make himself emperor. On the eve of his illegal coronation, the bell boomed over the city, unstruck by human hand. As if by magic, public opinion turned against Yuan Shikai. The coronation never took place. Shikai fled and died a broken, disappointed man in exile. The old Buddhist priest who showed me the bell told me that when it sounds, as it does every night at curfew, it can be heard for 30 miles around. And as it rings, Chinese mothers summon their children to tell them the story of Kuai, the girl who loved her father more than life. Believe it or not.
And here's Harriet to sing for.
Your eyes are blue, your kisses too. I never knew what they could do. I can't believe that you're in love with me. You're telling everyone I know
I'm on your mind each place you go. I can't believe that you're in love with me. I have always placed you far above me. I just can't imagine that you love me. And after all is said and done, to think that I'm a lucky one, I can't believe that you're in love with me.
Something for me tonight?
Well, I certainly have. And it's a bit of wisdom written 4,000 years ago by Hammurabi, king of Babylonia. Hammurabi was one of the first benevolent rulers, and he is famous for his code of laws. One of the public statements of Hammurabi recently found was this one: bread is endowed with mysterious powers, having a beneficial effect on man and beast.
Well, Bob, that's very interesting. And I think it's also interesting to know that scientists have just recently discovered why bread has such a beneficial effect upon the body. These scientists found that bread is not only a wonderful food in itself, giving us muscle-building proteins and energy-giving carbohydrates in almost the ideal proportions. They also found that bread helps us to utilize more of the iron in other foods for building rich red blood, and that bread speeds the digestion of the average meal. Bread aids the digestion by stimulating a flow of strong digestive juice. In this way, bread helps the digestive organs do their work more easily and more effectively. So, eat plenty of bread. First of all, because it tastes good. Second, because it's the best and cheapest energy food we have. And then also for the sake of your blood and your digestion. Have some bread with every meal you eat.
Got a rabbit's foot in my pocket, got a rusty horseshoe too, got a little elf sitting on my shelf, still no luck with you. I got a good luck ring on my finger, I got a penny that's brand new, got a voodoo charm hanging on my arm, still no luck with you. I throw salt over my shoulder, hoping I'll get a break. Never let a black cat cross my path, even sleep upon a piece of wedding cake. Got a hunch the jinx has got me, I don't know what to do. Now you can't deny, I sure do try, still no luck with you.
Say, Bob,
yes,
before you should continue. I thought Lincoln Ellsworth was going to be with us tonight. Did you forget about it?
Oh, no, Harriet, I didn't forget about it. But during the week, Dr. Ellsworth was called to Washington, where on next Wednesday, President Roosevelt will present him with the Hubbard Medal, the National Geographic Society's award for his daring exploits at the South Pole. Dr. Ellsworth extends his apologies, and he says he will be with us next week. But speaking of forgetfulness, Harriet, did I ever tell you of the time I went sailing on the River of Forgetfulness underneath the sands of the Sahara Desert?
Underneath the sand?
Believe it or not. It's the same River Lethe mentioned by Homer in the Odyssey, and its waters are supposed to make one fall asleep and forget. It's located in North Africa, about 100 miles south of Benghazi. I was startled one day to suddenly come upon a great cavern in the sand. I descended down into the darkness until I came to a river. And with the aid of the camel drivers, we lighted flares, rigged up a boat, and paddled along beneath the great Sahara Desert, believe it or not. You know, the Mohammedans believe that if they drink the waters of the River Lethe, they will not only fall asleep, but become very strong. The Turkish sultans always drank it. An old Mullah Ismail of Morocco sent caravans thousands of miles for it and drank deeply and successfully, I may add.
What do you mean, successfully?
Ozzy, believe it or not, old Mullah became the father of 888 children.
Did you drink any of that water yourself, Bob?
Honestly, Ozzy, I don't remember. I've forgotten whether I did or not. But I'm not the only one who forgets. Others forget sometimes. How about the absent-minded burglar, Florian Henske, who broke into jail? Now, this happened in Vienna only last year. Or Mrs. Teresa Vaughan of England, who forgot she had 61 husbands. When she was arraigned in an English court for being 60 times a bigamist, she explained that she was too absent-minded to remember her 61 husbands. And how about our own Thomas Edison, who forgot to take out a patent on his invention of the motion picture projector? Now, this little oversight cost Edison $1 billion. Now, I would like to draw you a radio picture of the most absent-minded man I know of. He was Professor Lask. The scene opens in Hamburg, Germany. And here we find the professor in a terrible hurry, preparing to go out for the evening, when in the midst of shaving, his servant enters the room and handed him...
A message, Herr Professor. A boy just left it in 28.
Yeah, what?
A message.
Well, I can't stop now. Why must they bother me at such a time? All right, give it to me.
I beg your pardon, Herr Professor, but that is toothpaste you are using, not shaving cream.
Yeah, yeah, well, it is. Well, I'm finished now. You get out my coat while I read this.
Yeah, very good, Herr Professor.
What? No! It cannot be! My wife! Hans, what time is it?
20 minutes to 8, mein Herr.
Oh, not a second to lose. Quick, the coat. I must rush.
But you are only half-dressed.
What does that matter? You see this? My wife. She's dining with another man. The message says if I reach the Hotel Rhineland by 8 o'clock, I shall see them together with my own eyes. Oh, that this should happen to me. My position, the disgrace.
Yeah, but, Herr Professor...
Out of my way, you hear? Out of my way. Cab. Driver.
Ja, mein Herr.
Quick, the Hotel Rhinelander.
Ja, mein Herr.
Driver, what time is it?
4 minutes to 8.
Oh, I must be there by 8.
Impossible, mein Herr.
You know, 3 times your fare if you make it. If the professor stops you, tell them I'm the police. I mean, if the police profess you, if the professor, if the... Oh, hurry up, quick.
I, mein Herr. Hold on. We made it, mein Herr. Just 8 o'clock.
Ah, good. Here, take it all. It doesn't matter. Oh, this cursed door won't open. You there, behind the desk. You, Herr Tauber.
Good evening, Herr Professor.
Oh, you are tired. Oh, it makes no difference. Tell me, my wife, where shall I find her?
Hey, Lask, I fear I don't understand.
You don't understand. Hear the message. It says in plain German, another man, my wife.
Your wife, Herr Professor.
Ach, Tauber, excuse me. I just remember. Why, I'm not even married.
Now, if anyone doubts this incident actually occurred, the full details may be found in the memos of the German Chancellor, von Bulow, as told to him by none other than the German Kaiser himself, believe it or not.
New rhythm fantasy, it's called Doing the Prom.
Women. Well, not necessarily the ones who spent the most for their clothes. And it's the same way in cooking. The women who get the most praise for their cooking are often those with the smallest food budget. These women not only know how to make things taste good, they also know how to make their dishes look appetizing, how to give a meal flair and style. A very easy and inexpensive way to dress up your meals is to garnish more of your dishes with toast. Crispy, golden brown pieces of toast brighten up and set off a dish, make it seem special. For instance, scrambled eggs are apt to look skimpy on the platter, but just surround your scrambled eggs with a border of toast, and you've got a bountiful-looking dish. Few of us can afford to buy large servings of filet mignon, chops, or sweetbreads, but small portions of choice meat seem quite ample when served on pieces of toast. Also, toast can be used to piece out and lend distinction to leftover meat and gravy. And many vegetables, such as asparagus, cauliflower, and broccoli, that you serve with the sauce, look best on a background of toast. So use toast to give your meals more variety and style. Garnish as many dishes as you can with toast. And take advantage of the special that bakers are having all this month on coconut layer cake. At less cost than you could bake it yourself, bakers offer you a cake that looks and tastes as delicious as any homemade coconut layer cake. Try one this week.
And in saying goodnight, let me use the very words inscribed on the bell of the maiden. These words are not engraved, but were actually cast in the bell from the mold made by Kuan Yo. It's a verse from an old Buddhist prayer. May the fair moon caress you with its silver light, and like a lotus pond of pleasant gleaming water, clear and cool, may sleep descend upon you.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.